Hey, welcome back to Politico Tech. Today's Monday, March 25th. I'm Stephen Overly. And I've got my colleague Maggie Miller with me today.
Hey, Stephen.
So you got to sit down recently with Jen Easterly, the director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, otherwise known as CISA.
Yeah, I got to go all the way out to Ballston, which for our non-DC, Maryland, Virginia residents is one of the key suburban areas of Virginia. So very, very fun.
So glamorous, the suburbs of Virginia. You know, you and I were talking before this interview. CISA is obviously dealing with China-affiliated groups trying to hack their way into American infrastructure. They are dealing with, you know, foreign meddling in U.S. elections. It's a pretty young agency that is really confronting big threats.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it only became an official agency in 2018 under President Trump, and it's become the main defender of our election systems against foreign interference efforts. And that's put them under a huge microscope on Capitol Hill and around the country as there's been more debate around, you know, the security of elections. So they've really pushed in the last few years to try to thread the needle and present themselves as an independent and bipartisan agency, all while, as you'll hear in this interview, trying to defend our critical systems against threats from China and Russia and other nations.
So the head of this agency is Jen Easterly, who you've told me is a bit of a colorful character, not exactly a traditional, you know, DC bureaucrat type. What's the deal with the Rubik's Cube?
So the Rubik's Cube is something that she brought in when she took over in 2021.
You know, but it's not that hard to do once you get the pattern down.
And it has the CISA logo on it, so it's not just your average Rubik's Cube.
But that the cool thing about the CISA Cube is that it is a speed cube. The old days ones were actually much clunkier and harder to solve. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why it's so coveted, because it's very fun to do and not clunky.
She often brings it with her on stage during public appearances and solves it. And it's become this iconic symbol of CISA to the extent that I've traveled as far as Estonia on reporting trips. And it's been brought up to me by officials. And I basically had to beg my way into getting one because it has become this very coveted item in the cybersecurity community. And it is something that I brought with me, actually, for the interview and had it sitting in front of me unsolved, which I think got to the director. And about halfway through the interview, you may hear her reach across the desk and take it. And she proceeded to solve it without breaking comment, without compromising the interview, and I just sat there in awe. And it's certainly become her trademark and CISA's.
Well, CISA is dealing with a lot of complex problems, maybe the least of which is the Rubik's Cube, but I'm excited to hear all about this, so let's get into the interview.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Director Easterly. And to start us off, before we dig into the larger specific threat of China, the CISA Rubik's Cube has really become a trademark, not only for CISA, but for yourself. It's in your bio picture, for example, and very coveted in the cybersecurity community. So to relate that to China, when you think about cyber threats, is this a Rubik's Cube that can be solved?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I've been obsessed with those things since I was the age of 10, and they came out around the world. I do think about the various puzzles that are out there, that we have to find a way to align the sides such that we can work together to keep global cyberspace safe and secure. You know, I know we're talking about China today, Maggie, but at the end of the day, all these things are interlinked. You know, I was just in Kyiv with my partner, Nate Fick, who's our ambassador for cyber. And just as you can't solve one side of a Rubik's Cube to be able to solve the whole puzzle, you can't see the fight in Ukraine in isolation from what's going on potentially in the Taiwan Straits. we have learned from them, because they are actively under not just barbaric kinetic attacks, but also very serious cyber attacks. And so we are learning about how they are able to actively defend and build resilience into that critical infrastructure as they remain under duress. And so all of this is connected, just as global cyberspace is connected. That's why we have to work together with our myriad of partners to ensure that we can understand that threat and drive down risk to the nation.
And to drill in on the specific threat we're looking at today, which is China, at the end of January, you appeared in front of the House Select Committee on China with some of the other top cyber officials to warn, as you put it, of the potential for a, quote, cyber invasion of our nation's networks due to vulnerabilities that China could exploit. So what has changed in that threat space since the hearing, and what were some of your key concerns that really made you make this really strong statement?
Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to get this message out, because even last year, if you went back and looked at the Director of National Intelligence assessment, there was actually a very stark warning in writing about China's cyber capabilities. And I was always confused and a bit concerned that nobody really latched onto that. And I've been very pleased at the fact that this is now starting to get traction, and that we were able to do a public hearing where you had me, Director Ray, General Nakasone, Director Coker. We had a platform to really talk about this threat. And the key thing that has changed that I would want the American people to know is, you know, we often talk about the intel, or the intelligence community does, in terms of reporting. And I think that this administration has done great work in being transparent about intel and getting as much of that out there. There's one thing to read the intel. It is another thing to actually confirm the intel, because based on the intel, we have been out to multiple critical infrastructure providers across aviation and water and telecommunication and energy to confirm the Chinese intrusions that we read about, they are actually there. So that's point one. I think the second thing is, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and we always looked at China as the great espionage threat. And they still are a very significant threat with respect to espionage and data theft. But what we're seeing now is a different kind of threat. And that is an intention to burrow deep into our critical infrastructure, not to steal data, but rather to be prepared to disrupt or destroy that critical infrastructure in the event of a major conflict. And so this is a world where a major conflict in the Taiwan Straits, halfway across the planet, could well endanger the lives of Americans here at home. How? We could see it through the disruption of telecommunications, pollution of our water systems, severing of transportation nodes, power going out. And we know what the goal is, because it's in doctrine. It is to induce chaos, induce societal panic, and to deter our ability to make decisions at the leadership level to marshal our military might and our citizen will to defend Taiwan. At the end of the day, it will be extraordinarily difficult to prevent every bad thing from happening. So we have to expect disruption, we have to prepare for it, and we have to be able to respond quickly and recover rapidly to be able to provide critical services to the American people.
And one of the areas that has been a big focus of Congress and the White House recently is port security. And we had a report come out recently from the House Homeland Security Committee and the House Select Committee on China, which says they found, quote, cellular modems installed in Chinese-made cranes from a company called ZPMC, which are present at 80% of U.S. ports. So can you talk about what CISA is doing to help defend ports, bearing in mind, of course, I know Coast Guard takes a lot of the lead here, but what's CISA doing here?
It is a very serious threat. And we have had a lot of discussions on the Hill about this. I was really excited that to see the EO that came out and the Coast Guard's rulemaking around this, because I think that's very important. And then new investments in creating cranes. The Coast Guard is what we call the sector risk management agency for maritime transportation sector. But as we'll hopefully see when the replacement comes out for PPD-21, the National Security Memorandum, CISA in statute plays a critical role as the national coordinator for critical infrastructure security and resilience. And the importance of a coordinator is that we can't just think of these sectors in isolation, right? A port needs energy, needs communication. We have to focus on that cross-sector risk. And so we have a fantastic relationship, as you can imagine, with the Coast Guard. We have Coast Guard members who are embedded within CISA. We work together on hunts to include around Volt Typhoon activity. And we are very focused on protecting ports, just given how important a role they play in our economy.
And thank you for anticipating my next question by bringing up Volt Typhoon, which, for listeners not aware, has become, I would say, the poster child for Chinese government-affiliated hacking groups that are threatening the U.S. And recently, CISA and its allies and partners put out a warning that this group, Volt Typhoon, had been in U.S. networks for, quote, at least the last 5 years. So when you think about threats from China, how much does Volt Typhoon feature in those threats? And have you seen any change in their activity since being called out so publicly?
Yeah. So people should think about, when I say Chinese cyber actors, particularly with respect to this campaign of burrowing deep into our critical infrastructure for the purposes of preparing for destruction of that critical infrastructure, people should see that as Volt Typhoon. And interestingly, and you know, this is only what we've been able to discern so far, we have not seen significant changes to activity after the announcements that have been made. We are still seeing potential evidence of this activity or actual evidence of this activity out there, which just says to me that these actors are very aggressive. They are very intent. And as I testified, what we have seen to date, actually confirmed, is likely just the tip of the iceberg. And that's why reporting it, partnering with the federal government, because we truly have the expertise, we understand how these actors operate, we've found them before, we've eradicated them, we've helped critical infrastructure owners and operators to mitigate this threat. We understand that the stakes are incredibly high.
We'll be right back.
And one of the other issues brought up during this hearing that you testified at were concerns around the security of the upcoming election in November. Obviously, CISA takes a major leading role in this, in defending against foreign interference. And China has promised not to interfere in our upcoming elections. So, one, do you believe that promise? And two, what are you most concerned about from China in terms of threats to our upcoming election?
I don't want to impugn the motives or the intention of anybody. You can look at the Director of National Intelligence assessment of the 2022 midterm elections that was declassified and published in December, which notes that the aggregate scope and scale of foreign activity in our elections had grown materially since 2018, since those midterms. They also talked about the increasing diversity and number of foreign actors intent on interference and influence to include increased activities on the part of China. We've seen foreign activity in 2016, obviously, 2018, 2020, 2022, and we should expect that foreign adversaries will continue to attempt to influence or interfere with our sacred democratic processes. We know that. We should be prepared for it. I do think it's really important for every American to understand that election officials ran secure elections since we've been tracking this as a federal government. 2018, 2020, 2022, there is zero evidence that malicious actors altered, deleted, or changed any votes or had any impact on the outcome of an election. Now, I've spent a good bit of time with state and local election officials since I took this job in 2021, and I will tell you, the vast, vast, vast majority of them work tirelessly day in and day out to do the right thing by their citizens to ensure that every citizen's vote is counted as cast.
So with that in mind, as we go into the next year, what can you preview that CISA might be continuing to do to prevent Chinese intrusions into networks? What are some of your key hopes, focuses for the coming year?
Well, I have a lot of hopes, but let me tell you exactly what we're doing. I mean, we are intently focused on this threat. It is, I would say, mitigating risks from China cyber actors and ensuring the security of elections are my two foremost priorities for 2024. And so we are actively working with critical infrastructure now. That's obviously working in close partnership with our federal partners across the board. We are also leveraging our collaborative mechanism. So the Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative, we've brought together partners to ensure that we can plan against this threat. And then what comes out of both of those things are the advisories that then go out to the community. We published one on the 7th of February that laid out what we were seeing from active hunts that we were doing. Now, one thing that intersects with both election infrastructure security and Chinese intrusions into our critical infrastructure is probably our other major priority, and that is technology safety. And we've been working very hard on what we call secure by design. And that, at the end of the day, is a recognition that for decades, the technology manufacturers have not had to prioritize security. It's all about prioritizing speed to market and cool features and not security. And quite frankly, that is one of the reasons why we're dealing with Chinese cyber actors inside our critical infrastructure, because those actors have taken advantage of flaws in our technology. So secure by design tech, I think, is really the long-term answer to cybersecurity, because we wouldn't have cybersecurity or the industry that we have today if technology had always been created secure by design.
So as a very quick follow-up there, you mentioned, of course, further engagement with the private sector on countering threats from China since the January hearing, since the February 7th alert. What has happened in terms of private sector companies reaching out and being aware of this threat and wanting to work with CISA?
Yeah. I mean, it's been pretty extraordinary to see the engagement, and not just from the big companies, but working with some of these smaller entities that are still critical infrastructure, the water facilities, the hospitals, the schools, the local election offices, working with them to help them do some very basic things. This is not rocket science. We're going to roll out our Ready, Set, Cyber here in the next couple months to take advantage of trying to make it as simple as possible for smaller, less resourced entities to raise their cybersecurity baseline. We're doing that. We're signing up more partners for vulnerability scanning, because at the end of the day, it's understanding where you might be vulnerable and then being able to patch those vulnerabilities. But until we live in that world where incentives are realigned to focus on security first, there are basic things that can be done to ensure that companies are aware of open vulnerabilities and that they can immediately take action to patch those vulnerabilities and reduce risk to services Americans rely on.
So as we close out, What more can Congress do to help CISA in this drive to protect U.S. networks against threats from China, but as you've noted yourself, threats from many different cyber actors? And what is your kind of big ask in the next year?
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, in general, we have greatly benefited from bipartisan support from the House and the Senate. And so what I consistently ask from our friends on the Hill is to continue to ensure that we have the budget that we need to support and defend the American people, that we have the authorities that we need. One of the things that I talked about at the hearing in front of the China committee was a look at minimum viable cybersecurity standards. This has been something you've heard the White House talk about a lot. At the end of the day, ensuring that every critical infrastructure owner and operator takes action to implement minimal cybersecurity standards, that will make a significant difference. The other thing, and I know the National Cyber Director Office, because we're working with them, they're working on this, is the idea of a software liability regime that is rooted in a measurable and articulable standard of care. And that also, and this is really important, provides safe harbor provisions for those technology manufacturers that do responsibly innovate by putting security first. Now, those last two are big pieces of work. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we come together as a nation, and we heard this from the president's State of the Union, if we act as a nation against the very serious threats that we are facing around the world, we will be stronger for it. And for me, who's a lifelong independent, who's worked for both Republicans and Democrats, my only focus is as a public servant to do everything in my power to protect and defend the American people and the critical infrastructure that they rely upon.
Thank you so much, Director Easterly, for joining us today. And as a cybersecurity reporter, I will continue tracking your work very closely.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Maggie. And I'll give you back this Rubik's Cube solved. The CISA Cube is a little trickier because it's got the CISA seal. So you do the top line and then you align the sort of center. Right. And so then you have to solve for the sides. So like at the end of the day, it's kind of just an algorithm. Once you get it, it becomes very easy to do. But you just have to, you know, so when I the joke was when I was a kid, I taught myself. It took about a month to learn how to solve it. And I went around to all these toy stores and I bet the toy store owner or the clerk, hey, if I can solve that thing in less than 2 minutes. So that's the second layer there. Will you give me a one for free? So they're like, yeah, this little girl can't solve anything, right? Because back then it was, you know, you look at the internet now and you could see little kids solving it with their toes in like 6.7 seconds. Back then it was a big deal. And so I amassed this collection of Rubik's Cubes. And, you know, I've been doing it ever since then.
Well, may I just say, I've had that on my desk since April, and you are solving it in minutes, where I've just been fiddling around with it. So
So that'll be
humbling.
That'll be the good thing about you coming out to CISA to do this interview, is you can go back. So, but I'm sure what somebody's going to do is probably come up and mess it up as soon as you get back.
Most
so,
likely, yes.
There you go, Maggie.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish our listeners could see this. This is impressive.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Music in today's episode comes from the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Our managing producer is Annie Reese. Our producer is Afra Abdullah. And our editors are Steve Heuser, Daniela Cheslow, and Louisa Savage. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here tomorrow.